Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at ArmorAll.com. Armor All. Less work, more clean. Terms apply.
From Transport Topics in Washington, D.C., this is Road Signs.
And now here's your host, Michael Fries.
Thank you for listening to this special episode of Road Signs, a podcast series from Transport Topics that explores the trends and technologies that are shaping the future of trucking. Before we dive into today's episode, we'd like to invite you to subscribe to Transport Topics, where you can receive exclusive access to our top 100 lists, quarterly magazines, and other news surrounding the trucking industry. To subscribe, visit ttn.ws/TTSubscribe. You can also text TTSubscribe to 571-622-0001 to become an official member of Transport Topics. That's 571-622-0001. In this episode, we will ask the simple question, what does it take to start a trucking business? It may be a simple question, but the answer is complex. That was the premise of our new Transport Topics Road Signs Workshops. Throughout the industry, there's new obstacles every day, from workforce and business development to broken links in the supply chain. With our Road Signs Workshops, we open a direct line to you, the industry professional and the problem solver. With a live Q&A, we allowed our listeners to get engaged and walk away with answers and solutions to their business problems. In this episode, we'll give you a glimpse of our first how-to workshop that focuses on starting and growing your own trucking business. If you are a soon-to-be or an existing trucking business owner, this debut of Road Signs is for you. To get a better understanding of this question, we spoke with John McGee, founder and president of John McGee Trucking, as he shares his 30-plus years of business experience. Let's take a listen. Welcome to our very first Road Signs Workshop. My name is Michael Fries. I am the features editor with Transport Topics, and we are pleased today to start off our first Road Signs Workshop. We're really excited to have this next guest. Our topic for this workshop is how to start your own trucking business. And we have a person, when we first approached this gentleman about this project, he was very happy to do that. He had said to us that the two things that he likes to talk about is trucking and running a business. So he is a perfect guest for this inaugural workshop. His name is John McGee. He is the founder and the president of John McGee Trucking LLC out of Northern Louisiana. He had founded that in 1991. Started off as one man in one truck, and he has now built his business over 30 years from his humble beginnings of that one truck, one man operation, JMT, as we like to call it. Employs 26 people, has 21 trucks on the road daily, a fully equipped shop, and is continuing to grow as we speak right now. So, Mr. McGee, welcome to our very first Road Signs Workshop.
Michael, glad to be here.
Glad to have you on. Just to get everybody caught up to what we're doing here, you know, this is a workshop on building your trucking to scale. So we definitely want to kind of go into the origins of wanting to start a business and the actions that needed to be taken to get that going, and also to grow it and scale. So that's kind of the premise of why we're all here today. And Transport Topics, on behalf of Transport Topics, I'd like to thank everyone who has registered for the event and who is participating in it right now. Thank you for joining us. So, okay, let's dive into it. So into this today's how-to, which is how to build a trucking business. We want to go off into the high level plan of what you need to do. And step one of that particular plan is writing a business plan. You know, we all have ideas of writing business plans, you know, whether it's for a trucking business or a lemonade stand. So, I mean, there's a whole bunch of ideas to get across and get them organized, of course, to identify your goals and also to articulate your value proposition. So, you know, you kind of want to get those all in together. So, Mr. McGee, our first question to you is, you know, how did you go about your business plan when you first wanted to start this business?
When I first started, I was in the logging, and like you said, I was one man, one truck, and my basic plan was just to work. Mm-hmm. I had no aspirations or dreams of hiring any help or being any bigger. I was just going to get up every day, find a customer, and work for them. And then as the opportunities came, you know, as far as the business plan, when we started hiring drivers, we had transitioned into the oil field in the early 2000s. And I guess the biggest business plan we had was financing. You know, we would go to the bank, talk to the bank, and we would show them on paper. We didn't really have a formal business plan, I guess, up until about 4 years ago. And at that point, we started working with our not only our CPA and our banker, but also all of our trucks that we run are Mack trucks. We started working with our Mack dealer, you know, coming up with, how are we going to sustain this? At what point do we say enough is enough? You know, so we've always basically based it on customer demand. You know, we're not going to grow just to see how many trucks we can have. There actually has to be work for the trucks. Mm-hmm. As far as a written or a formal plan, we never really had one. Like I said, we just sat down and worked with the CPA, the bank, and Mack Finance.
Yeah, it was, as we were talking before, you know, it was sort of a path less taken when you had first started. I mean, it was just, you had used your retirement money, right?
When I first started, that was my backup plan. I told my wife, I said, I'm going to try this for a year. I'd been driving a truck, delivering ice cream, you know, working for somebody else. I loved the trucking side of it. Mm-hmm. I said, I've got enough in retirement. We'll try it for a year. You know, we'll make it for a year no matter what. At the end of the year, if it's not working, we'll just back up and reboot. Mm-hmm. And I guess I was 31 years old, so, you know, I was still young enough. I wasn't worried about losing a nest egg or anything. I did some, you know, unprecedented financing. I borrowed some money from a local finance company at 24% interest and different things. But within 6 months, I knew I'd found where I wanted to be. Mm-hmm. We were making good money and never looked back. After that, I kind of started trying to squirrel away some money.
Yeah, that's because everyone's path is different, you know. I mean, but you know, the qualities of getting there, you know, are sort of standard. You had a roadmap that you mapped out, and you got to where you are. And as you said, you know, you're saying you're growing and just kind of accumulating, you know, the resources you had while you were growing. You know, can you explain to us just sort of, you know, when you have a trucking company, you know, breakdowns are part of the deal. You know, and just those ancillary things that you have to deal with when you're moving transport, you know, no matter what it is. And you have to have those resources, especially financial resources, to have when those problems arise. Can you elaborate a little bit on just kind of having, you know, a rainy day fund, you know, just some of having those expenses that you can get to when you do have those problems?
And that's paramount. I know plenty of people that have had truck breakdowns that have ended up losing their business. Because, you know, if the truck's not working, you're not making money, but they're still wanting their loan payment. They're still wanting their insurance payments. And if there's nothing coming in, those are pretty tough notes to swallow if you haven't built up a rainy fund. I've always tried to pay myself a salary. And then, you know, when it's good, just put that money back to where we do have a reserve. Mm-hmm. Now, you were talking about breakdowns. We actually, going yesterday and today, we've had three trucks to break down. You know, one of them lost a clutch, one of them lost a fuel filter, which required a wrecker to get them off the side of the highway. And then the third one, the driveline came out. And we grind, you know, new equipment. I mean, nothing we have is older than 4 years. Nothing we have has got more than 300,000 miles. and we got a full shop and all, but breakdowns still happen. And we're blessed that we have, you know, enough trucks to where we don't lose work if we have a breakdown. We just lose the truck availability. But we were able to get them in, get them all three. Well, we're waiting on the clutch right now, but we were able to get the other two trucks already back up and going. But without the wherewithal, you know, without the funds, if you will, to cover it, especially on a smaller operation, I mean, it's catastrophic. I've always tried to keep 90 days of cash in reserves just for emergencies like that.
You know, John, just I just kind of want to dig a little bit deeper into your answer before we move on. You know, you said, you know, getting repairs, you know, as an operation such as yours, you know, with the trucks that you have, I mean, do you have an in-house maintenance, or do you go to a third party to, fix, you know, maintenance issues?
We've got two full-time mechanics. The way we work, and we work local / regional. I mean, everything we do is within, or 98% of what we do is within 150 miles of our shop. Okay. So all of our trucks come back to the shop at least six nights a week. You know, we have three trucks that will stay out, you know, once or twice a week. They'll stay out one or two nights. Mm-hmm. But our scheduling is such that the shop gets to see every truck at least one day a week, you know, while the shop is open. Okay. So with that, we have our rotation, our preventive maintenance. You know, we got two full-time mechanics, and they keep an eye on the tires and on the fuel and on the air and on the lights. You know, all that's just the routine maintenance. Plus, they do the scheduled oil changes and brakes. You know, the next level, all the way up to, we don't do, you know, all of our trucks are under warranty, so we don't do the major work, but mm-hmm. anything that we can do, just like the clutch, you know, we'll do that in-house. So, yeah, we do it. Probably 85% of our maintenance is done in-house, but the only thing that goes outside is warranty work.
Okay. All right. Yeah, that's always a question that fascinates me, especially when we're talking small fleets, and just sort of how they deal with their maintenance issues. You know, just some people are in house, some people are third parties, some people have a, you know, a hybrid of that. So it's very interesting to know how that's done. Last question before we get out of sort of the business plan of things. You know, what is your advice for those who are struggling to have a business plan and just kind of finding the right pieces and parts, such like a CPA here, or you know, figuring out, you know, whether they want to be, you know, the bank, the type of bank they want to use. What is your advice for those people who are kind of stuck in those particular situations?
And I can't speak for everybody, but with us, you know, we found a CPA that was comfortable with the transportation segment of the business. And then we'd use a local bank, you know, to where the man that we're sitting across the desk from is the one that makes the decisions. You know, we know him, he knows us, we've kind of got the same goals in mind. We, you know, the customer, because it doesn't matter what kind of business plan you have if you don't have a customer. And that was kind of the way we got into the oil field was, you know, we had a customer that was coming to us saying, can you fill these needs? Well, that's how we expanded, I guess. I was in the oil field, but I had a customer saying, can you fill these needs? Gave us the opportunity to expand. And then that was when we, you know, sat down with the bank and said, you know, if we add two trucks here and add a truck here, you know, and they're thinking, well, you're gonna go from a three truck show to eight trucks in 1 year, but we had the customer, we had the demand, and we were able to make a go of it.
Okay. Well, it's always important to have that team assembled and knowing what you're good at and knowing what you're not good at to make things very successful. So let's go to our next step, number two, just legally establishing your company. You know, when operating your trucking company as a properly structured corporation or a limited liability company, or LLC, that sets boundaries between, you know, the personal assets and the business liabilities. Just kind of a refresher for those out there about a company establishment. You know, so once you form that corporation, LLC, you most have to take the following steps. And this is one thing we want to talk about, John. Obtaining your EIN, your employee identification number, to open a bank account. to start off with? I know it's kind of, I mean, in the grand scheme of things, it's a simple process, but could you elaborate on the importance of that and how it affects a trucking business financial operation?
Well, like you just alluded to, you know, it separates your business from your personal, and the EIN is basically your business's social security number. And right or wrong, good or bad, there are a lot of things that you have to have the number. You know, you have to have your EIN number to pay your payroll taxes. You have to have your EIN number to file your 2290s. And it's not that hard, or at least it wasn't when we did ours. You know, you would just go on their, I guess, the IRS website and get it. But without it, you know, nobody takes you serious as a business.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like the difference between a lemonade stand and a convenience store. Yeah, you can buy the lemonade at either place, but the convenience store is here forever.
Right.
It's that actual business.
You know, it's great that you made that distinction. You know, just you know, from your personal experience, you know, you had said that you had started off as a sole proprietor. And then you had changed from an LLC after 20 years being in the business, you know, and that was on the advice of your CPA, just kind of going back to, you know, getting that team around you and you know, I guess maybe, you know, helping you find those blind spots. What were some of the advantages from going to a, you know, sole proprietor to becoming an LLC?
Well, with us, you know, while I was a sole proprietor, it was just me, but so the sole proprietor, and I don't remember all the schedules, but on the taxes, you know, we were being taxed on 100% of the profit. Whereas once we became an LLC and I took the same payroll, but I didn't have to pay the Social Security taxes on the profit. You know, we just paid the capital gains taxes on the profit of the company every year. It also gave us the advantage, know, of, like I said, using the business credit to where we were able to finance trucks in the name of the business versus financing everything in my name, which, if, you know, something catastrophic happened, would protect us on the legal side of it.
And so, you know, it's definitely, you know, a muddled mess when you don't have those particular simple things in place. With the EIN and just getting the paperwork and the establishing your company, it's very important to get that step taken care of. You know, that starts it off. So, I mean, if you misstep on that, then, you know, I mean, you would be in the world of hurt trying to catch up. You know, let's move on to our third step. Excuse me there. Just obtaining the necessary business licenses and permits. You know, there's many things involved when pursuing such licenses and permits. You know, there's many things, you know, to consider. Of course, you have the CDL, and then also you have the US DOT number that you have to, have for your trucks to have that unique particular number. And then also, you know, you have your motor carrying operating authority number. And then of course you have ABOC, you know, 3 filing as well. And you know, for some others, you have your RIP, which is the International Registration Plan credentials, and the International Fuel Tax Agreement decal. So, I mean, there's a whole bunch of other things that need to be involved when you're obtaining your license and permits. But what I want to ask you, John, is should these licenses and permits be acquired in any particular order?
No, I don't really know. I would think if the purpose of the trucking company is to provide employment for yourself, you're going to need the CDL and the appropriate endorsements on that to start with. The rest of it, like I said, the EIN number just about always has to come first. Mm-hmm. The DOT number, the IFTA stickers, you know, your IRP, all of the rest of it, it's not that complicated or convoluted. I don't know if there's an order I have to get this before I can get that or not, but it's paperwork. I know there's a couple of different companies that are able to do everything in-house. And you know, the type of work we do, every one of our trucks has a binder with probably 200 different permits, you know, for everything from where we can haul, where we can drive, and where we can unload, the hours we can operate, the areas we can operate. And so it got to where with us, we handle it all in-house, you know, simply on the economic side of it.
So, yeah, so you said you handle all your work inside, I mean, all of your reporting in-house, correct?
Right.
And that's, I mean, I'm pretty sure it's time-consuming, but it definitely has to be done to get everything in order, especially when it comes to compliance and regulatory issues. So that's one of the things, but you know, that's one of the things, you know, when you, especially in the trucking business, you know, you're working in your business, but you know, these are the cases where you have to work on your business as well. So that's definitely a needed necessary tool.
And you know, we're talking about compliance. Compliance is as important as cash flow. It doesn't matter how much money you're making if you're not staying in compliance with whatever agency is regulating you. It's all for naught because, you know, paperwork will shut you down.
Hello, Roadside listeners. Dan Ronan here from Transport Topics. I'm here to tell you about our new extended cuts of the Road Signs podcast. If you like what you learn here, I think you're going to really love this. So what is the Road Signs extended cut? Well, instead of ending the recording and saying our guest farewells, we're keeping our expert guests around for an extra one or two questions to gather a deeper, fuller picture of the influential topics in transportation. We capture that insight and convert it into a printable download that will help you navigate the latest trucking trends and guide your next business decision. Considering the easy, linkable, and printable format, you can keep the extended cut for your next big meeting, send it to your friends and colleagues, or pack it up for your next big conference. So how do you get the latest download? Well, it's real simple. Visit ttn.ws/extended cut. That's ttn.ws/extended cut.
You know, growing a trucking business and starting a trucking business, you know, you have your business plan, you established your company, you're taking care of your licenses and permits. Now, you know, we're at the one man, one truck stage of this right now. You know, we're going to, you know, buying versus leasing the right equipment. There's many fleet owners and prospective, you know, owner operators who are battle with that question, you know, the ones that I've talked to, you know, about buying equipment versus leasing equipment. And, you know, the proper equipment can make the difference between success and failure. You know, so when selecting equipment for your trucking company, you know, usually the considerations are, you know, making sure the vehicle accommodates the needs of your cargo. And also, like I just mentioned, you know, realizing whether it is feasible to lease or buy your equipment. So I know, John, you've been in this for 30 years, so I know you have a lot to say buying versus leasing. So where do you stand in all of this?
I've always, when we first started, you know, we were buying new trucks, mm-hmm. and I was running them until I had a million miles on them. Mm-hmm. And I always had a number in the back of my brain, which, you know, when I first bought my first truck, the truck payment was about $1,200 a month. Mm-hmm. But as long as I wasn't spending more than $1,200 a month in breakdowns, mm-hmm. I was planning on running the truck. And that mm-hmm. was kind of our philosophy. And we did that all the way up until, I guess, about the last, well, I think it was in 2016 when we really started growing. And at that point, we met with our truck dealer and the bank and Mac Finance and kind of looked at the sweet spot. And we looked at leasing versus buying because we were trying to keep all of our equipment under warranty. But with our setup, you know, we'll run a truck 4 years and it doesn't have but 300,000 miles. And when we're buying the trucks with the 5-year, 400,000 mile warranty, mm-hmm. running them 4 years with 300,000 miles, we could sell the truck with a year manufacturer's warranty or 100,000 miles. And so historically, that's kind of the sweet spot of the truck. You know, you can get out of the truck with the best return on investment. We were able to do that all the way into, I guess, probably the third or fourth quarter of 2021 when the supply chain kind of, you know, hit the brick wall. So now we do have some trucks, which they're well maintained, but mm-hmm. they're getting towards the end of the warranty. You know, our 2019 trucks that we bought the last quarter of 2018, we're going to end up having to keep them into probably the second quarter of next year. So we'll actually be running a few trucks, you know, that the warranty, the time has run out. They're still low mileage, 350, 360,000. We're not having any trouble on them. But the ones that we were able to sell, and it's crazy when you think about it, but we were running brand new under warranty equipment for $1,000 a month. Our return on it, if we paid $140 for the truck brand new, when we were selling them for $90,000, you know, and had run the truck for 4 years. Okay. And you can't lease a truck for $1,000 a month. So, you know, for our corner of the market, the only thing that makes sense is to buy and maintain it.
Okay. Yeah. It's just, and also with the trailers, you buy them new as well?
Well, yes, we buy our trailers new. Now the trailers are a little bit different story because probably 70% of what we haul is salt water, and salt water is corrosive. We'll get our trailers with an epoxy liner, but the salt water will still eat up the fenders. It'll eat up the tailboards, you know. So we'll run the trailers. They have a life expectancy of 10 years. And right now our oldest trailers, I guess, are about 10 years old. We took two trailers through our shop this past summer and, you know, refurbished them. And when I say refurbished, we replaced all the rotted out steel on them. We repainted them, cleaned everything up. The liners on the inside were still in good shape. So we're hoping to get another 4 to 6 years. Now, we've just begun that process of refurbishing. And mm-hmm. that, again, was kind of during the COVID and the supply chain, because the prices went from, in a 4 year period, they almost doubled in price to where what we were buying for $45,000 was now $85,000. Mm-hmm. So we thought, well, rather than replacing them, let's spend $10,000. And see if we can extend the life. So that one's still an experiment in progress. But we've got two more trailers we're going to refurbish this next summer.
All right. Well, I'll be interested to see how that's going. You know, that's hopefully it can give you some savings in the long run. That's for sure. You know, John, one of the things that we talk about here at Transport Topics a lot, you know, we always build our Road Signs podcast as looking at trends and technologies that are shaping the future of trucking. But, and one of the things that we talk about is, alternative fuels. We talk about electric trucks a lot. You know, I know that's, you know, way ahead of the curve from where you're standing at right now and everything. But the environmental impact is something that you're in front of right now. What's your perspective of the potential environmental impact of the trucking industry, and how can new businesses address sustainability through the equipment that they use?
Well, the biggest thing that we've done, and we're in the oil and gas industry, and you know, and I'm not scared of an electric truck because 70% of all the electricity is generated through, you know, fossil fuels. So it's either oil, gas, or coal that's generating the electricity. So I'll drive an electric truck and haul your oil for you all day long. But the biggest thing that we're able to do, simply because of the expense of getting into, you know, some of this hybrid trucks, the electric, the hydrogen power, whatever, mm-hmm. and then you have to totally revamp the shop to be able to even, you know, work on them or do anything with them and have a whole different skill set as far as your technicians. Mm-hmm. But the biggest thing we've done is we started specking our trucks, you know, to run cleaner, to get better fuel mileage, you know, to be a little bit safer of a truck. We run automatic transmissions. Our newest trucks have disc brakes on them. You know, we've got the accident avoidance. Where the business we do, a third of our time is sitting idle, you know, with the PTO pump running. So our fuel mileage isn't, you know, real great, because mm-hmm. like I said, a third of the miles we're just idling, or a third of the hours. But we have gone from 4.4 miles per gallon 5 years ago to, you know, 4.7 miles a gallon now. which that 3/10 doesn't sound like a lot,
right?
But you know, spread out over and 3/10 on 4.5 is twice of what 3/10 on, you know, 7.5 or 8.5 would be.
Right.
So that has saved us, you know, not only in terms of the cost of the fuel and the maintenance on the truck, but also, you know, greenhouse gases, if you will.
You know, that's, you know, it's very important, you know, to get those small gains, you know, because especially when you're talking about, you know, a fleet of trucks, you know, those savings can accumulate. And, you know, like you said, you know, 2-3% is, you know, at first is nothing to sneeze at, but at the same time, you know, when you get those, you know, when you get that advantage per truck, you know, that fuel savings, you'll be able to realize that and see that. And, you know, so it's one of those things that those small steps turn to big advantages eventually. So, you know, that's, you know, it's great that you definitely keep an eye on that and an eye on the future as well. You know, so, you know, because, you know, EVs are coming, you know, whether some like it or not. So, but yeah, so, you know, so right there, we have our equipment. We decide what we want to do with our equipment and, you know, in our trucks to see if they're, you know, feasible and you know, we can have some cost savings and fuel consumption savings along the way. But of course, we can't go anywhere until we have proper insurance coverage. And John, you know, when we had promoted this workshop, one of the many questions that we've had about this is the insurance. We have, I'll just take, there's many people who ask this question, but I'll say Bill Burrows. He asked this particular question, and it's quite simple. Any tips on securing the best insurance for trucks? I mean, there's a lot out there to consider. You know, you have primary liability insurance, cargo insurance, physical damage insurance, and passenger accident insurance. How do you navigate through all that?
Well, it goes back to what you had said earlier, Michael. You know, what you can do yourself, you need to do it yourself, but you also have to have enough sense to know what you need help doing. Mm-hmm. And you need to, you know, just like a good CPA, a good banker, you have to have a good insurance agent. And there's so many products on the market, you know, it's hard to do a do-it-yourself insurance. And I would just be so scared to try to do anything, you know, online insurance or anything like that, because what defines a good insurance agent to us is, I know he's going to show up on the day I write the check for the premium, but I want him to show up the day that I have a claim. Now, whether it's my fault or someone else's fault, when I need help, I need help. I don't want to, you know, call a 1-800 number and get somebody that doesn't know me from the man in the moon. As far as the types of coverage, now the type of work we do, we haul wastewater, but we still have to have a cargo insurance. Now, these people are paying us to get rid of the water. Mm-hmm. Now, so the water has zero value to them, but then we have to have the cargo insurance simply to satisfy their insurance requirements. The same thing on the, you know, our biggest concern is the pollution liability in case we have an equipment malfunction or, you know, some type of inadvertent release. We have to be able to clean it up, and, you know, everything is expensive. So we have the insurance in place for that. Now we have the contractor's liability because the environment we work in, you know, we're working in active oil and gas locations. So we have to have the liability in case something goes wrong on our side, you know, to cover all of that. Then we have the general liability, you know, going down the highway. If somebody is involved in an accident or what have you, and then on top of that, we've got our, I'm not even sure what they call it anymore, but the auto coverage, you know, the physical damage that pay for the truck if something happened to it. So we're a member of a captive now, but before we got in the captive, our insurance agent, he was an independent agent, and he would shop, you know, 30 or 40 different carriers, and we may end up with 5 different policy holders for each one of that type of coverage, simply because we were shopping for the best price. Now that we're in the captive, you know, it's a little bit more defined because some of the insurance the captive provides for us, we provide some of our own. But It to me, it's just like the bank and the CPA. You know, it's you got to have a good insurance agent.
Yeah, and you know, as you mentioned, you know, not one size fits all. You know, so you know, depending on you know whether it's cargo protection or physical damage or you know auto liability, you know, it's all you know, it's when you do get that insurance carrier, you know, it has to be customized. You know, I mean, it's you know to what you do and what you're offering and you know the and most important to you know to yourself and the people that you employ, right?
That's right. Yeah.
So. All right, you know, the last step in this, you know, I know it sounds simple, but these are the particular steps that need to be taken just to get this off the ground, to get your business off the ground. And, you know, we've gone through the insurance, we've gone through the policies, you know, buying the equipment. But now, you know, we definitely, since we are running a business, we do have to understand and track the income and expenses. And John, before I get into this, I think this particular question, there's a question someone just asked. I think this pertains to when you're talking about income and expenses, you know, and you said you have employees on staff as well. Crystal Stone just popped up in the Q&A chat. Crystal is asking, how are you able to find local drivers and retain them?
Well, so, and we run a local company, and I've been doing this for 30 years. We've got a pretty good reputation, and we have drivers, you know, that are constantly trying to come over here. We don't have that many openings, and when we do have an opening, we'll have 8 or 10 candidates to choose from. Most of ours come through reference, you know, like either I personally know them or one of our drivers knows them and has worked with them. Mm-hmm. But any of them that come in, irregardless, you know, we do vet them. We have a pretty good safety record, and we want to maintain that safety record. So we spend the extra money, do a pretty good background check on them. We run MVRs. We do the pre-employment drug test, you know, the FMSCA clearinghouse or whatever it's called. Mm-hmm. Now we check their references. If you're going to give me somebody's name and number for me to call, I'm going to call them up and ask them. And doing all of that, you know, every once in a while somebody will still slip through. But if you basically, I guess like Ronald Reagan used to say, trust but verify, you know, we'll check out what they say. But, and I believe them. I give everybody the benefit of the doubt. And we've hired people, you know, that have had an accident. We've hired people that have never done what we do, and we can train them. Mm-hmm. A lot of it has to do with character and integrity. Mm-hmm. Just interviewing them, making sure. I want to see your work record and your life record more so than your experience, per se.
Hey, Road Signs listeners, it's your man, Mike Fries, here to tell you that the call-in lines are open. What does that mean, you may ask? Isn't this a podcast, not a radio show? You're correct, but we found a new way that you can call in and leave myself or my co-host, Seth Clevenger, a message. Leave us a message on new topics you'd like to hear more about or ask questions you may have about the trucking industry. Give us a ring at ttn.ws/speakpipe.
You know, we talk about you're in the oil sector, and you are transporting that from point A to point B. And there's a lot of things we've been talking about, equipment and permits and licensing. But at the end of the day, this is still a people business. You know, so I mean, there's still a human driver that's taking those things to their needed destination, and you know, vetting as you do, you know, it helps you make you know the successful business decisions that you know help you. Yeah, this particular point that you're at right now, as for the income and expenses that you're tracking, we spoke about this, you know, throughout this workshop. It was just sort of, you know, hiring a CPA. You know, we talked about the importance of that. And we talked about, you know, maintaining, you know, business expenses and records and things like that, and keeping your personal and business personal finances separate. You know, and you know, we touched upon that quite a bit during this workshop. And you know, we've built this as a how-to, John, but you know, before we open it up to Q&A. Let's talk about the why of what you did. You know, just sort of the why you starting a truck business. You know, because, you know, 70% of all freight in the United States is currently transported by the trucking industry, and that industry is supposed to grow 27% by the end of this decade, I mean, by the next decade. And, you know, such as yourself, you know, 91% of the trucking companies out there, out here today, have six or fewer trucks. You know, and that means that in this industry, it's dominated by small carriers, mid-sized carriers. I mean, we can talk about the UPSs and the, you know, the FedExes, you know, they do their service. But, you know, the majority of trucking companies out there are operations such as yours, John. You know, and it's a highly competitive market, you know, so it's, you know, what was some of your whys into that? Because, you know, like you said in the beginning, this is, you know, trucking business is not for the faint of heart, you know, and having that drive, because you can have these business plans, you can start off with your business, but you definitely have to have that foundation of why. And John, what is your why?
Well, for as long as I can remember, I mean, my whole life, I just always knew I wanted to be in trucking. I don't know. I can remember as a kid standing by the road, watching trucks go by, playing with trucks. Once I got grown and got married, I had a family that was in the logging business. I saw the opportunity. Biggest thing was I felt like if it was my truck, mm-hmm. I could dictate my paycheck. If I wanted to take off, I could take off if I wanted to. But if I wanted to work and make the extra money, all I had to do was work. And I was raised with a good work ethic. Mother used to tell me, you know, if you're broke, you have two choices. You need to work more, earn more, or spend less. And so in my whole life, I've learned, you know, the combination usually covers it. So that was how I got into trucking. You know, it was, like I said, just to provide a living for my wife and my family, and I knew it was something that I loved to do. As the opportunities came to us, when we transitioned to oil field, we had customers coming to us. I had several people that I worked with for, you know, 5 and 10 years, and I thought, well, I've always believed in the golden rule, you know, doing to others as you would have others doing to you.
Right.
So I thought, why not hire some good men and treat them the way I would want to be treated if I was working. And so that's how we started. And I've still got a couple of those guys, you know, that have been with me ever since. Mm-hmm. I had two or three guys that have already retired from us, you know. And so we took it from there. And then it gets to the point to where, you know, now we're able to mentor some of these guys. We've had three different drivers in the last, I guess, 4 years that left us to start their own trucking companies. And I get to reach out and show them and help them. Now, I'm to the point now to where I've got enough people working for me that I don't feel like I have to be here, you know, 16 hours a day, 7 days a week. But I can get out and give back to the community. You know, and I enjoy that. I got 10 or 12 teenage boys that I, you know, fool with. They're all coming from, you know, different circumstances that just aren't what you would call the, you know, the Leave It to Beaver family.
Right.
They got parents that are incarcerated. They got custody battles. They got, you know, just all kind of struggles. But that's what keeps me going every day. I don't know, as far as, I mean, I love it. I don't even consider it a job. I just wake up and come to work every day.
Well, that's a good feeling to have. And also, you know, just, you know, having former employees, having businesses of their own, and then, you know, giving back to the community and helping, you know, at risk younger men. That's a great thing when you can, you know, you can start off, as you said, you know, you work for yourself. And then you grew this business, and you're able to help those people that, help those people help themselves and continue to do that. So I think everyone that's listening, you know, strives to be in that particular position. As for the steps, you know, we've covered that, but let's get into
our Q&A session that we're having before we head out of here. And but our listeners have some questions, and let's go with the first one with from Sandy Linder. And Sandy asks, are there some truisms or tips owners could apply when hiring any CDL for short haul and perishable material or dump trucking?
Well, I mean, that's the same thing we do. That was what I was saying. We use references, you know, the best that we can, and we verify the references, but we also look at all the background, you know, everything that we can, not necessarily dig up, but everything that we can discover on your MVR, and, you know, do a background check. And we have to have I can't speak for every trucking company, but because of the type of work we do, we have to, you know, do safety sensitive operations on a lot of these facilities. So we kind of have to make sure who we're dealing with. It's not to say that you can't have made a mistake in your life. It just depends on what the mistakes were. But we do all the pre-employment drug checks, you know, all of that. And like I say, our biggest trick with us is the references. If you're going to say, call Joe Smith, he knows me, and I call Joe and he says, I wouldn't hire him to push a wheelbarrow. Now that kind of lets us know something pretty quick.
All right. We have another question from Brent Rogers. This is a very good question. Britt says, we're a small trucking company doing contract work for one customer. We're looking to expand and diversify, but are struggling to find and gain an audience with the right prospects. Do you have any advice?
I wish I did. We've tried to diversify. Right now we're 100% oil field. We've tried flatbeds. We've tried bottom dumps, you know, hauling grain. We tried hopper bottoms, I guess is what they call them. Mm-hmm. But it is all about getting that relationship. Now, I've actually renewed a relationship here in the last few months, you know, to move some lumber for our local company. And we may re-enter that market. But our biggest philosophy with our customers, we like to under promise and over deliver. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm not going to brag on us, but a lot of our work is, you know, on demand, and they'll call and they'll say, we need a truck now. And I'll tell them, I can get you a truck there in an hour and a half. And so what we strive to do is beat that hour and a half. You know, we'll set our expectations low, and then we'll show up in 15 or 20 minutes. And it kind of helps you to build the reputation, but then you have to maintain it. You know, you can't show up 2 hours late tomorrow after you were 15 minutes early today. But getting in with the new, because we're actually, that's the point we're at. We're just with him. We're considering trying to, you know, figure out a way to hire a salesman or something to try to, you know, we've got good customers, but there's a lot of competition in our area and our business, and so we're trying to hold on to them and trying to figure that out ourselves.
Okay. That's just the people listening right now to our workshop, the questions are coming, and they're very good questions too. I have a few more, John, before I get you out of here. One is from Willis Freeman Jr. From a fleet perspective, what would you suggest the size should look like at a startup? And also, in addition, do freight agents make good trucking company owners?
On the second question, I would think yes, because you know, you're the broker, you're handling the loads, you see where the money is to be made. As far as the size, like I said, we've always allowed customer demand to dictate our size rather than running out and buying 20 trucks and then looking for somebody to utilize those trucks. You know, we started small, and as the customer demand was there, we would add trucks to meet that demand. Mm-hmm. But, you know, like on the shop, we'd never had I was the in-house mechanic until we weren't able to afford a mechanic until we got to 8 trucks. know, so there is a sweet spot there. You have to have enough trucks to hire the help, but then you have to have enough work to pay for the trucks. So it's, you know, it's kind of a yin and a yang, but I would think a freight broker that would be able to see where the market was moving ahead of everybody else.
All right. Well, I hope Willis has his answer there. That was a pretty good question, Willis. We have a question from Steve. He wants to know about your business, John. Do you have employee member benefits? Do you have types of benefits that you employ to your staff?
Yeah, we have real good benefits, I believe. Now, all of our drivers, you know, we pay by the hour. We pay overtime once they hit their 8 hours a day or 40 hours a week. The way our shifts work out, most of our drivers average between 56 and 63 hours a week. We work 12-hour shifts, you know. They're either 4 on and 2 off or 5 on, 2 off or 6 on and 2 off. So the split and time it all averages out. We try to work a 11 to 12 hour shift. Then, you know, we have, and the market kind of dictated this with us the last few years, but we have a 401k with a real good match. We have company uniforms. We have, we provide health insurance. We have safety bonuses every month. We have a production bonus, Christmas bonus, longevity bonus. We have, these guys get to go home and be with their families every night. And our full-time drivers, you know, start out at about 70 to 75,000. But we also have drivers that, you know, all of our drivers have the option to work one of their off days, you know, till they run out of hours for the restart. But we'll have drivers that make, you know, low six figures, 110, 115,000 a year. Okay. I say they're working 12-hour shifts home every night. Okay. So we have real good benefits. We have a real good pay package, and that's how we're able to retain the quality of drivers that we do have.
Okay. Well, Crystal, and Steve appreciate those questions and those answers. You know, so I think you know, you got them squared away there. John, this will be the last question, then we'll get you out of here and conclude this workshop. This is from the Nate Gibbs, and the Nate wants to know what are some of, I mean, you've talked about this a little bit, but I mean, but if there's some other things that come to mind, please share. What are some of the positive and unexpected outcomes when you first started your trucking company?
Well, like I said, when I first started, I guess being able to control my own paycheck. You know, if I was in the logging business, and you know, I was working for 5 or 6 different contractors, and if this contractor was slow or if we were, you know, on quota or rained out, I'd move over and work someplace else. The I look back now, and when I did this, I wasn't intentional about doing it, but I look back now because I've always thought that an honest man's got a chance. People act like you got to be a crook to make it, but honest man has got a chance. And I've always, you know, tried to treat others as I wanted to be treated. I was fair with everybody. And, you know, after 30 something years, I have people that come up and they'll say, I remember when you cut my timber. I remember when you did this. And so that's kind of one of the long-term benefits that I never really thought I would, you know, never even thought about. But, and I am to the point now to where, but like I said earlier, we can give back to the community. We got 5 or 6 different, you know, local organizations that we're behind, you know, Truckers Against Trafficking, Freedom 13, which rescues women from sex trafficking. We've got a local food bank, and we've got a couple of junior high schools that we support. You know, and I feel, and I'm not trying to get on the soapbox, but I think that where society is failing is these preteens and teenagers, you know, these kids that are 10 and 11 all the way up to 16 and 17, but they're basically out here raising themselves with nobody trying to look after them or show them the right way. And I feel like if we could start trying to turn the generation at that curve, and that's what I'm focused on, you know, with all these boys, but trying to just show them the right way to do things. Because if nobody's ever showed you, you don't really know. I'm not saying that's an excuse, but
right.
And that's one of the unforeseen, you know, benefits I've had from having this business. I've worked many 100-hour week. You know, I would drive 70 hours and then spend all day Sunday putting the truck back together that we had tore up so we could go back to work Monday. You know, and done that many a time. And it hadn't been easy, and it's, you know, a lot of sacrifices. There's been weeks that I didn't get paid so I could pay the drivers, you know, but that goes back to, you know, having a realistic budget that you're going to live on, you know, not thinking that you're some kind of gazillionaire or something and everything's, you know, peaches and cream.
Right.
But I don't have any regrets, you know, in it. I think looking backwards, because we've got a top of the chart CPA. I wish I'd had this CPA, you know, 20 years sooner, because we've had him like 11 years, I guess. But the rest of it, I've always had good people around me. And, you know, I guess in the big picture, it's easy to look good when you're surrounded by good people.
That's a great way to wrap a bow on this, John. You know, you have been watching the Road Signs Workshop, or debut of the Road Signs Workshop, How to Start a Trucking Business. And we have John McGee as our guest to show us how. John, it was a pleasure having you on here and sharing your 30 years of experience and helping our listeners on the right path on starting a fleet. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Michael. I enjoyed it. And if there's anything else you need, just reach out and call me.
Sure thing, sir. Sure thing. And that wraps up our workshop. Thank you, everybody, for joining us today, and have a great day.
Did you know you can ask Alexa to open Transport Topics? In just 1 minute, you will hear the biggest trucking headlines of that day. Be prepared and start your morning off right with Transport Topics.
Before we close, let's take a moment to revisit the previous question in our conversation with John McGee. What does it take to start a trucking business? As I mentioned earlier, it's a simple question with an array of complex answers that go in several directions. As John McGee laid out, this business is not for the faint of heart. There will be roadblocks to overcome, as with any journey of this kind. However, in the Transport Topics workshops, the concern of our listeners have been centered around insurance rates and finding the right resources, the two issues that continue to plague most fleet owners, as safety, compliance, and labor issues still persist across the industry. As our hope with these workshops, we want to provide value in any trucking business venture you might endeavor, while giving you an honest and real-world view of what to expect in this industry. John McGee gave his experience and stories of how he navigated through this, and hopefully it can help you too. Be sure to look for more Transport Topics workshops in the near future. If you enjoyed this episode of Road Signs, please let others know. Rate and review us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts. Feel free to reach out to the Road Signs team on Twitter at @TTRoadSigns, or reach me at Michael V. Fries. You can email us at share@ttnews.com. We'll read them and respond daily. Also, let us know how we're doing by texting TT Survey to 571-622-0001. We'll be back next week with a brand new episode of Road Signs. Until then, I'm Michael Fries. Thank you for listening.
Want to learn how you can make smarter decisions with your money? Well, I've got the podcast for you. I'm Sean Piles, and I host NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Our show features our team of nerds, personal finance experts in credit cards, banking, investing, and more. And they'll help you make the most of your money while cutting through the clutter and misinformation in today's world of personal finance. You'll get clarity on strategies to help you build your wealth, invest wisely, shop for financial products, and plan for major life events. Listen to NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you get your podcasts.